Oh, be still, my beating heart. Could my deepest, darkest dream actually come true?
The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Wow, I wish I could remember what that dream was so I could tell you if it did or not. Coming to you from the Carter Subaru Studio. Welcome to our top stories this hour. Been a very busy afternoon. Got lots more news to get to that affects your life. Let's get right to The Big Lead.
The Big Lead. Top story.
So when politicians want a news story to kind of fly under the radar, they release it late in the afternoon on Fridays, especially a Friday before a three-day weekend, which is what this last Friday was. That's when the city of Seattle announced the police chief, Adrian Diaz, that they would no longer do traffic stops for a variety of offenses, one of them being expired tabs, which I'm fine with because tabs, most of that money goes to Sound Transit. And Sound Transit is the most criminally corrupt public agency in the history of the United States of America. But there are a lot of other things. If you have a broken taillight, they used to be able to stop you for that. If you have a crack in your windshield, they used to be able to stop you for that. But the police chief has announced that they're not going to do that anymore. And that's because a very far-left activist has said that they should cut all low-level traffic stops because of equity. Equity. They said that a disproportionate it's not just traffic stops, but they're not going to enforce riding a bicycle without a helmet. And I didn't have a helmet. I used to ride my bike unbelievable number of hours per week as a kid and into my teens and into my 20s. I was pretty avid biker. I'd take my bike out to the velodrome in Redmond and ride there at high speeds. And I didn't start wearing a helmet until I was a family man. Then I thought, I got responsibilities beyond just myself now. But, I'd be mortified if my kids rode a bike without a helmet. But Seattle's not going to enforce that anymore. They say that a disproportionate number of black and brown people have expired tabs and ride bikes without a helmet and have broken tail lights and all of that. Now, it also means that if somebody has stolen a car and shifts out the plates before they commit a robbery, you know, the police already can't pursue these vehicles. If they could radio in and find out if the car belongs to the license plates, if it matches the description, if it was a 2004 Honda Civic that robbed the store and they see a blue 2004 Honda Civic and the license plate doesn't match the car, well, they're not even going to check that anymore for equity purposes. And again, they say that a disproportionate number of black and brown people don't wear a bike helmet and have expired tabs and all of the other things that they're not going to enforce anymore. Now, there are a couple of factors. I've had a bunch of police officers reach out to me and say, do you realize, Dory, how many times when we do pull somebody over for expired tabs or a broken taillight and we just ask them for their ID, how many times we find somebody who has a serious warrant and many times a felony warrant? And all those people are going to go uncaught now, you know, white, black, brown, whatever their race. But there is another larger question that I think needs to be addressed here. I found stats from the United States Department of Justice, and they talk about, for violent crimes, the race of the offenders. And I know this is a delicate question that I'm going to ask, but I think it's a relevant one given what Seattle has just decreed. In the United States of America, white people make up about 80% of the population. Black people make up about 12% of the population. But according to the Department of Justice, black people in America commit about 29% of the non-fatal violent crimes in America. So just like with car tabs and with broken taillights and with bicycle helmets, a disproportionate number of black people commit or are charged and convicted with violent crimes. A disproportionate number. So if the reason we're getting rid of traffic stops is because a disproportionate number of a group of people commit those traffic infractions, then what other laws do we suspend if a disproportionate number? And of course, what you hear is that it's disproportionate justice. The justice is not handed out evenly. But it also turns out that the number of people who are arrested and charged and convicted of crimes tracks almost identically with the number of calls that are made to 911 about those crimes by race. And so it's not, there aren't any stats that would suggest, there are for things like, you know, powder versus crack cocaine. Why was crack cocaine sentenced to prison so much more harshly than powder? Well, powder was like a white yuppie drug, especially in the 80s, and crack cocaine was a black inner city drug. And it was outrageous that we sentenced people far more harshly for rock cocaine than powder. It was outrageous. And that's a case of discrimination that I think it's easy to make. But when it comes to the violent crime thing, there aren't a lot of stats to back up discrimination just because the number of police calls track the number of arrests and charging documents and convictions by race. So what else should we suspend because of disproportionate justice? And I think all of this ignores, I mentioned this yesterday, what is really something that we need to deal with as a society, and that is when you have a large number of kids who don't have dads, you're more likely to be in poverty, you're more likely to fall in with the wrong group, you're more likely to commit crimes. And I just wish, instead of saying, we're not going to enforce bicycle helmet laws, that we could at least have a conversation in our society about restoring the family and getting fathers back in kids' lives. Because that's what the issue is. That's what, whether it's car tabs or violent crimes, the root cause is the destruction of the family and the absence of fathers. But that is a very, for some bizarre reason, a very politically incorrect issue to bring up. Which is, I guess, why I bring it up. Because, not to intentionally be politically incorrect, but because I just think all of this is window dressing. We're not going to stop people anymore for a bike helmet. But you're still going to stop people for violent crimes, even though the stats are the same. Makes no sense. But we're too gutless as a society to talk honestly about families and fathers and their role in the success of kids as they grow up. All right, up next in the Big Lead.
The Big Lead, Big Local.
Well, it is a short legislative session in Olympia, but they have some plans. There are about 30 anti-gun bills down on the docket in Olympia, many of them from last year. And over the weekend, new Seattle Mayor Bruce Harrell announced his intentions to try to get an unconstitutional gun ban in Seattle. Dave Workman is with the Citizens Committee for the Right to Keep and Bear Arms. He joins us here on the Dory Monson Show. Dave, always good to talk to you, sir.
Well, it's my pleasure, Dory. This is hardly a surprise to anybody that I know that Bruce Harrell would come out of the gate swinging in the direction of a gun control law.
Well, the thing that does surprise me a little bit, his niece, Monisha Harrell, over the weekend said, can we just get guns out of the parks where our children play? And two things. First of all, they haven't gotten the heroin and meth addicts out of the parks where our children play and the needles, so that doesn't seem to bother them. And then secondly, we went through this. You and I certainly talked about it a few years ago when, who was it? Was it Mike McGinn who tried to get a Seattle Parks gun ban?
I believe it might have been back when he was mayor. This has been like 10 or 11 years ago. And
yeah.
This was when Bruce Harrell was actually on the city council. The city of Seattle deliberately trying to challenge the state preemption law adopted this actually a regulation. They tried to get around the law by calling it some kind of a parks regulation, where they would not allow any firearms, including firearms carried legally by licensed citizens, in any city park facility. Well, naturally, the Citizens Committee, along with the Second Amendment Foundation, National Rifle Association, the Washington Arms Collectors, and five individual Seattle residents, took the city to court. We won at the trial level in King County Superior Court, and then at the Court of Appeals, when the city of Seattle appealed, we won a unanimous ruling against the city of Seattle supporting and upholding the state preemption law, which has been around since 1983, and it was amended in 1985. So we got a law here that's almost 40 years old, and it's been upheld.
Okay, so we hear all the time about this preemption law. What is the preemption law?
The preemption statute, which is has been a model for dozens of other states around the country, by the way, that pass their own. The preemption statute puts all authority for firearms regulation in the hands of the state legislature, period. The cities all know this, and you know, over the years, most of them had tried to leave the law alone, but there are some cities that dislike this law. They have been lobbying against it to overturn it almost since the day it became law back in 1983. And the idea that, you know, the state constitution does come into this because the state constitutional provision says that the right of the individual citizen to bear arms in defense of himself or the state shall not be impaired.
Right.
In the minds of the firearms owners who have lived with this law for, you know, nearly 40 years, 35 years, let's be fair. They say, you know, it's good. What's good in Aberdeen should be good over in Spokane. From Vancouver down on the Columbia River up to Blaine in northern Washington.
Right.
The law is equal. Everybody follows the same law.
Well, and you know, what's shocking to a lot of people, as far left as our state has become, is we do have a state constitution that is very strong on individual liberties and personal rights and freedoms and gun rights. And I know it shocks people when they realize that the people who founded our state were very, very different from the people who run our state in 2022.
Well, yeah, and our state constitutional provision is so good. It was adopted November 11th, 1889. When Arizona became a state back in 1912, they copied word for word our constitutional right to bear arms provision for their state constitution. They're exactly the same. And the idea now that, as you mentioned, it's okay for the Seattle lefties, if they have a park full of homeless people and drug addicts and drunks, that's okay, the big deal. But allow a private citizen to be legally armed in a park or any other facility, that just drives them nuts. And that's why they want to undo this state preemption statute, because it takes away the ability of, say, the Seattle City Council or the mayor of Seattle to regulate firearms set themselves up as really a city state.
Well, the other reason I said this surprised me a little bit, Dave, is because, as you said, Bruce Harrell was on the council when their attempts to do the same thing got struck down years ago. And then, secondly, it was just from a logical standpoint. Mike McGinn said, well, we'll put up signs in the park that say no firearms allowed, just like we have at schools. And of course, criminals don't tend to follow signs. And so what that would ensure is the only people in the parks who would be armed would be criminals because they're not going to lay down their guns. But the law-abiding citizens who are just there to defend themselves against the heroin. I mean, we had a shooting in a homeless encampment again yesterday. And the people who want to defend themselves, if that's their choice, it's their right and freedom to do so. So the fact City Seattle's trying to strip that away again here in 22, it's like they haven't learned their lesson.
Well, yeah, and you and I both know this goes beyond the city parks issue. The city of Seattle and other cities around the state that are in control of, you know, the Democrat / liberal city officials, they want to set up their own gun laws, which prior to this becoming law back in the early 1980s, we had a checkerboard of conflicting and confusing gun laws in this state. I think it was the late Senator Kent Pullen who brought all this together, and he said, you know, this is nonsense. Let's do something to have uniformity from one state border to the other. It was a great idea then. It's still a great idea. There's no reason why any citizen in this state should have to worry what he's going to wind up breaking an ordinance by crossing that invisible line when they're driving up I-5 going through the city of Seattle. That's just, it's stupid, and all it does is endanger the wrong people's rights.
Right. Yeah. Well, and that's always been my main point is the only people who tend to follow the law are law abiding, and criminals tend to not be law abiding. So then they're left as the only ones with the guns. Well, I don't have time to get into all the state bills, but I'm going to watch them very closely, and maybe we can talk again as those bills start to wend their way through the legislature. Okay.
Well, you betcha. You know, whatever else I am, I'm a journalist, and guns are my beat, so I'm paying attention to this.
Okay, all right. I'll tap into that expertise. Dave, it's always great to talk with you. Appreciate you taking the time.
My pleasure.
Dave Workman for the Citizens Committee for the Right to Keep and Bear Arms. And I'm telling you, man, Jay Inslee, he's doing all these executive orders, and he's got his emergency powers, and who knows what he is next to cooking next to try to take away some of our rights and freedoms. They've already taken away a bunch of them. And that is your big lead this hour.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
Coming up next, policies by Democrats in Olympia once again have had absolutely heartbreaking, tragic consequences. Details coming up next here on the Dory Monson Show. Saw this coming, and now we are reaping what we have sowed. And when I say we, I mean those of you who voted for Democrats in our state legislature. So it was a year ago when the state legislature was considering a radical police reform bill that was just a let's keep criminals free bill. That's what it was intended to be. That's what it has been. And I'm not just saying this now because I've been proven right. I was saying this a year ago before the bill was voted on. I said, if we pass a law that is the most restrictive in the United States of America on cops being able to go after criminals, the crime will follow. And it turns out, of course, as everything we say on the show is proven to be, we turned out to be 100% accurate. We are seeing a shocking number of car thefts here in the Puget Sound region and across the state. And I got an email last night from a Kitsap County cop. He was telling me that last year they had a record number of 639 cars stolen in Kitsap County. They've already had 74. In the first 11 days of this year. So they're on a pace to have 2,453 cars stolen in 2022. And they're on a pace that would quadruple last year's record. Now, it's a small sample size, and who knows if that pace will continue. But what we know is that the word is out among criminals that Washington is the best place in the country to steal a car. because the radical Democrats in our legislature made it so that cops are not allowed to chase car thieves. Even if the cops see the car, they're not allowed to go after it. And now the legislators, Roger Goodman and Jesse Johnson, who passed this horrible bill that has led to unimaginable danger on our streets, they say, well, we're going to try to fix it this session. Why did they submit it and vote for it a year ago? Well, we didn't know the consequences. Well, wait a second. I knew the consequences a year ago. I said, if this bill passes, this is what will happen. I was right. You guys didn't care. Jay Inslee signed this bill. He didn't care. And so what happens when we have more car thieves out on the roads? Well, car thieves tend to not be the most courteous of drivers. And what we do know is that on Saturday morning down in Pierce County, about 11 o'clock, a story I get emotional about every time I talk about it, two 12-year-old girls were walking down the street, no sidewalks. They're on the shoulder near a ditch when a stolen truck came way over onto the shoulder, hit the two girls, killed a little 12-year-old girl named Immaculee, badly injured her other friend. Her dad, John, told Q13 about the pain of having lost their beautiful 12-year-old daughter.
You know, my wife didn't even sleep at all, not even one wink last night. I mean, I just can't describe it. I don't think there's anything that worse that can happen to somebody than losing their daughter.
And he said this was more than just an accident.
It was a little more than just, oops, I accidentally hit somebody. This was somebody who veered into them and literally into the very large ditch which my daughter's, you know, body was lying in, you know, for a couple hours.
The truck that struck and killed one of these 12-year-old girls and badly injured the other had been stolen. And at My Northwest, we have pictures of the guy they believe is the primary suspect who went into a convenience store earlier that morning. And so there are pictures of him. He's wearing a mask. He's got a reflective vest on. But if from, you know, the nose, eyeballs, haircut, all of that, if you recognize this guy, let the police in Pierce County know, because there is a huge manhunt. But why does this happen? Well, Democrats in our legislature decided to make this the easiest state in the country to be a car thief. And then they act, oh, I'm so sorry this happened. It had nothing to do with our law. Now, we have record number of car thefts since that bill passed. And so when one of those car thieves, vehicle thieves, strikes and kills a 12-year-old girl, the people who passed that bill, they have some culpability in what happened. And that's exactly what we are seeing now with, you know, all the crimes that are being committed around here. We've legalized heroin and meth in our state. We've sent a message. You can shoplift. You can have open air markets on downtown streets with stolen merchandise. Nobody will disrupt you. We have open air drug dealing everywhere downtown. We have record numbers of shootings and murders by gun in King County in the last year and throughout the Puget Sound region. And it's because we've gone so soft on crime. We have a prosecutor who's legalized drugs. We have a Democratic legislature who has handcuffed our cops and freed our criminals to do whatever crime they want. And then they all feign sorrow when a 12-year-old girl is killed by one of those vehicle thieves that they have helped cultivate. And it's not just Seattle. It's not just King County in the Puget Sound area. The 12-year-old girl was down in Pierce County. But it's all across the country in places that have far-left leadership. In Los Angeles this week, a 24-year-old young woman was stabbed to death at the furniture store at which she worked. Brianna Kupfer, just a incredibly talented, incredible future 24-year-old young woman and a drug vagrant, they think. The guy still hasn't been caught. He walked into this furniture store. Brianna was the only person working at the time, and he brutally stabbed her to death. This is Brianna's dad, Todd.
We want her to be remembered as a person, a human being, and a caring, loving, and devoted family member, and a great friend, and just a rising star. She embodied so much that we all should be proud of in a young woman. And she had dreams and aspirations that unfortunately are going to be ended by this. She'll live on in many ways, but this kind of tragedy just can't befall more people. It's just so painful. We live in a community of families that have children similar in age to Brianna, and the outpouring of emotion is unbelievable. I mean, every parent feels this so deeply.
The parents of the 12-year-old girl in Pierce County, the dad of this 24-year-old woman down in Los Angeles. He was on Fox and Friends this morning, that dad in L.A., and the host, Steve Ducey, got very emotional talking to this dad.
It's the worst. And Todd, I know you wanted to come on to honor her memory.
Yes.
And I know you didn't want to be political, but you have blamed some politicians.
I'm not blaming anybody by name. I blame what's endemic in our society right now is that everybody seems to be oriented on giving back rights and bestowing favor on people that rob others of their rights. We should be celebrating the good in people and trying to recognize that that's the job they have, is to try to elevate that, to make communities better, to make people care more.
He's so right that we have people in charge who are trying to elevate the rights of the criminals at the expense of those of us who try to live law-abiding lives. One more example, in far-left New York City, where Times Square had been cleaned up after being a cesspool in the 70s and 80s. Giuliani and then Michael Bloomberg, they got tough on crime. And New York City, which I visited many, many times when it was cleaned up, and I could walk around at 3 a.m. on fairly empty streets in Lower East and West Side of Manhattan, Upper East and West Side, places you don't dare go today. But I never felt it. I didn't feel danger in New York City when I would go there with my girls when they were very young. New York was incredibly safe. But then you have Bill de Blasio and soft on crime and Times Square. The crossroads of the world has become a cesspool once again. And over the weekend, incredible young woman, 40-year-old Michelle Goh, was standing on a subway platform and a homeless drug vagrant shoved her in front of a train where she was killed instantly. A woman who had gotten her MBA and was working at Deloitte as an exec, and her life ends in an instant because of far-left policies that have let, I mean, the guy who committed that crime, his sister said he never should have been free. He never should have been out on the streets. But the far-left policies ensured that he would be. So whether it's 40-year-old Michelle Goh in New York City, or 24-year-old Brianna Kupfer in Los Angeles, or 12-year-old Immaculee down in Pierce County, these are all tragic. They're all unnecessary. And they are all inextricably tied to far-left, soft-on-crime policies. Way to go, Washington State Legislature. You going to get even more car thieves out on the road? Got anything else cooking to help the criminals in this legislative session? Take a quick time out, then we'll count down our favorite sound bites of the day here on the Dory Monson Show. Down the stretch we come. What a day, what a show, what a show, what a day. And I will tell you, we are working on a couple of exclusive stories for later in this week that are going to blow your mind. So make sure, if you ever miss a day or an hour, go check out our podcast. Go to MyNorthwest.com, the Dory Monson show page, and we have all of the shows available for you to listen to. But depending on how things fall together, a couple of exclusives coming up later this week on the Dory Monson show that are going to make some pretty big news here. All right, with that as mere prelude, it is time when we like to count down our favorite sound bites of the day.
This is Dory Monson's awesome audio clips of the day.
Okay, kind of have a little football theme here for a couple of these. Let's start with Peyton Manning. So he does a sidebar telecast during Monday Night Football. They had the first Monday Night playoff game last night where he and his brother Eli, they just sit and make comments about the game. And last night they tossed to Peyton Manning. I guess he didn't realize his mic was on.
Before you do that, Larry, let's go to Peyton. He's going to break down that touchdown.
I can't hear.
Never mind. Peyton's doing something else, Larry. Well, so you're back to you.
We can break.
Kyler's ready for this moment.
I've never understood. I've always been taught, always assume a mic is hot. But Peyton Manning, I can't hear bleep. Always assume a mic is hot. One time in my radio career, I said something that I did not want to go over the air. It was my first kind of more significant radio job at King 1090. And I said a word that I don't say very often. Not one of the horrible ones. It ends with hole. But it went over the air. I was mortified. I always assume the mic is hot. Mike Tomlin, the Steelers coach, he knows that. Steelers were huge underdogs when they went to play the Kansas City Chiefs over the weekend. And when he was coming out on the field pregame, the announcer asked him if he had a message as they were going to try to pull off a tremendous upset.
What will your final message be to your team before you send them out here?
Don't blink. If you're a blinker, cut your eyelids off. You know, this is not going to be for the faint of heart. We understand what type of game we're in. It's going to take a ridiculous effort in 60 minutes of it, and we're excited about it.
Then they went out and got blown out. They blinked too much. They didn't cut their eyelids off. Then one other football one. Several weeks ago, Tom Brady made all kinds of news. Man, he's the greatest quarterback in history, greatest football player in history, one of the greatest team sport athletes in history. And Tom Brady, he also, if you watch this documentary that ESPN's doing about him, it shows you somebody who has created his destiny with just hard work and determination. I think he's an impressive guy. But a few weeks ago, there was a kid who had brain cancer and was holding up a sign, was a big Tom Brady and Bucks fan. And Tom Brady went over to the kid and took pictures with him, and the kid started crying. And that storyline continues because Tom Brady just gave that same kid who's battling cancer tickets to the Super Bowl. Here was the original message encouraging Noah when Tom Brady first heard about his cancer.
Hey, Noah, how you doing? I just wanted to let you know that I'm thinking about you. I know you're one of my biggest fans.
And he sent him a long message. Noah loved it.
If you could say something to Tom Brady right now, what would you say?
Thank you. I mean, like, that's all I really have to say. Thank you. I'm sorry. It's so hard not to cry. Thank you.
Oh, come on. That was in November.
Well, Dory, Tom Brady, I was bawling watching this whole thing. You should see the whole story.
Oh my gosh, I'm bawling. I did the same thing.
Well, he got to ring the bell that he beat cancer, and his mom promised him as soon as he did that, that he would get to go to the game. So that's why she went on, bought the next game, sent him and his dad, and then Tom had that sign saying, Tom Brady helped me beat cancer, and then gave him his hat, and then continues so this relationship, and it's so cute.
Yeah, so the kid's in remission now, and Tom Brady surprised him again this weekend with this invitation.
I worked with both the Bucks and the NFL to get you and your family Super Bowl tickets this year in LA. We certainly hope to be there, but I know you're going to be there. It's going to be really cool for all of us. So glad to see you're doing well. Take care, man. And enjoy the tickets. Let's go.
Look inside.
Thank you so much.
You say, let's go, Bucks!
Let's go, Bucks!
And let's go, Noah! Nice job. Great story. Tom Brady.
He's going to be there?
Tough guy to dislike. Yeah, would that be something? The Bucks made it again.
I'm pretty sure they will.
Long shots this. Not long shots, but there are other teams favored ahead of them. Okay, I got to get out of here. The John Curley and Sherry Ellicker show is coming up next. God bless you in these crazy times. And we'll see you back here tomorrow. Hi, noon.
That's right. I'm history. I'm out of here. I got the lucky ticket home, baby. Rolling, rolling, rolling. Keep the wagon rolling, Rawhide.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. You're really a fantastic audience.